The Nick Scott Effect. The Nick Scott Effect. Available on Spotify, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Facebook Watch, and everywhere podcasts are found. Interview requests and show notes available at DJNickScott.com.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Thanks for checking out another episode of the podcast. Excited you're here and excited to have Chase on today. Chase Mitchell, he is from Atlanta, but he was born here in Charleston. His family's from the Charleston, West Virginia area. So, and he's had a very long career in the music industry. He started, I believe, at like 10 or 11 in a music band called, a boy band called Lucky. And then went on to do some hip hop and some pop. And I think he's doing some rock and country now. So very talented guy. And we're going to dive into the conversation with him next. First, I want to tell you about the sponsor of this podcast, Mountain State Oral and Facial Surgery and the Facial Center. They're right there together in Canal City, which is a suburb of Charleston, if you're not familiar. You can find them at thefacialcenter.com. The Facial Center is a full service medical spa to meet all of your aesthetic needs. They offer skincare products, facials, injectables, laser treatments, hormone replacements, PDO thread lifts, weight loss, help with weight loss. We could all use that, right? I know I can. And facial cosmetic surgeries. One thing that I'm going to do with the Facial Center is they also offer tattoo removal. I have one right here. If you're watching this on YouTube or Facebook Watch or even on Instagram, you could see I'm pointing at my left forearm. I've got a black rose that was a cover-up that I did years ago that I want to have removed. So they're going to help me remove that. We're going to show you videos and we're going to show you pictures of that process as well. So check them out at thefacialcenter.com. All right, Chase, let's talk to him, man. Pretty excited to have him on. Let's dive right into the conversation.
This is like the cheapest little headset of the quickest thing I could find. You know, all the new iPhone
mic down there?
Yeah, I think this is the mic.
Any way you could put that closer to your mouth?
Boom. How's this?
Oh, that's even better.
Sick.
All just right. Like that. You got to hold it like that now.
Oh, I can do it. I can do this for hours, man.
So it's good to have you on, man. We're just going to roll with it. And you're down in Atlanta, right?
No. So I'm in Nashville.
Now. Oh. When did you move up there?
So I was in Atlanta up until about 2018. And then we moved down to the panhandle of Florida, like Gulf Coast area, semi 2019-ish. And we were down there for a few years. My dad had actually hit me up and was like, hey, man, starting a cannabis farm, you know, because they had just passed the weed bill where it was like for farmer, like the farm bill, the farm aid bill. And I was like, dude, that would be amazing. I would love to freaking come and hang out and learn about the cannabis business and like the agricultural, horticultural stuff of it. So it was really fun to live down by the beach for a few years and work every day. It sounds awesome, but to be honest, dude, it's very labor intensive work. I figured out quickly a couple of years working on the farm, 100 degree heat down there in the real South that, yeah, music would be an amazing thing to pick back up with and try to make a career out of.
So you sent me a video earlier of you on a local news station in Charleston when you were 11.
Tell
me about your start in music and where it's taking you to this point in your career, because our paths crossed about, I don't know, 12, 14 years ago.
It's been a minute. At least over a decade for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
It was, what was that? We were doing the prom party, Riverside High School prom party. Yeah. Man, that seems like forever ago. So how I got my start in music, essentially, I was like 9 years old. This was back when boy bands were kind of like popping off, late 90s. I had an amazing opportunity to get linked up with Maurice Starr, who was like a big 80s manager, like New Kids on the Block, Menudo, a bunch of big, big bands. And he had casted me along with a few other dudes to be a part of a boy band and immediately kind of put us to work, got us in the studio. I was like 19 years old when we signed the deal. About a year into it, we started doing some summer concert series with Radio Disney, where we got to open up for like a bunch of different artists like Destiny's Child when they were first blowing up and a few others. But yeah, I was super young. And one of the coolest things, even though we've opened up for all those cool people and like did some cool stuff and a little boy band that was like on the cusp of doing something cool, I really will never forget being able to come back to Sissonville Middle School. That was like the first moment of like, wow, man, music's awesome. And when people are really into music you're making, how good it feels. Because, man, that was wild. Yeah, since seeing that clip online, someone had sent it in the other day. It's been years since I've seen any footage like that.
And then you went into, was it more like a hip-hop and top 40 there for a while?
Yeah, I mean, so I had really, after I got out of the boy band when I turned about 13 years old, 14, I made my way to Nashville then. In the first few years as kind of a teenager trying to kind of figure out where I go with music from there, it just happened to be Nashville. So I had always grown up in the South and loved country music, like old 90s Tim McGraw, Lone Star, you know, some of the heartfelt stuff.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
I always was drawn to it. I mean, I loved Garth Brooks growing up as the entertainer that he is and still is. And so I always thought, man, how crazy it would be if I could go to Nashville. And oddly enough, when I was in the boy band, we had made like one contact in Nashville when we opened for Mark Wills. And so we kind of just went on a hunch and some faith. And as I got out of the boy band, made my way to Nashville, started making some music up here, and just relentlessly networking and showcasing and stuff until I was about 16 years old. And I had gotten with Tony Conway, who is my manager today, but at the time was my booking agent, that kind of took an early leap of faith on me and kind of saw our vision of this popish country stuff and was like, all right, man, I don't know if it'll work, but we'll, cause you got to keep in mind, this was like early 2004, 5, 6, like Rascal Flatts was like just being accepted for popish country music. And that was kind of where my heart was at because of where I had grown up, obviously with a pop background and a love for country music. I kind of early on was kind of trying to adapt to that and how I recreate that. Didn't know, still trying to figure it out. but at the time, it wasn't as accepted. And so, you know, Tony was like, look, man, we're going to give you some years to grow this thing. Like, maybe we'll just keep you on the road for a little bit and not focus on really releasing too much music. And so we did. And so I was about 16 when he really kind of put the hammer down, with put me on a bunch of dates. I'd end up opening for Jason Aldean, which is where I ended up kind of first meeting my producer now, Danny Rader, because he was touring early on with Jason. And so I'd met him then, and then all these years later, kind of picked up with a project that I wanted to do after the pandemic and ran across him. And he and I just kind of the last couple of years been just like two peas in a pod, man, just picking up where we once left off and making a ton of music. And that kind of brings us to where we're at now.
That's awesome. And since the last time we've seen one another, I see you let the hair grow out a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. My dad kind of makes fun of it every now and then. He's like, son, when are you going to cut your hair? I was like, I don't know, man. I don't know.
I wish I could. My hair, you know, I've you know, kept it the skin fade on the side since I was in high school, you know, 20 some years ago. And I don't know, man, it starts getting a little shaggy back here and it drives me nuts. I can't do it.
Dude, that was the hardest part, is saying I had short hair. Matter of fact, over the course of the last 2 years, I started this whole project, and it kind of is an inside joke to my buddy. I buzzed my hair and I was like, dude, as we record, because I've been fortunate to have a content dude, you know, several weeks out of every month, just kind of journeying, recording the process and stuff and of this new album. And so I was like, dude, at the end, when we finally get around to finishing the album, put something out, I want people to see me go from bald to, I guess, long hair.
Long hair. Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you going to cut it into the coveted moulet, the mullet?
Oh, man.
You should do a mullet.
I've been tempted, dude. I have seriously been
You're
tempted.
You're in Nashville.
Some wicked ones. Oh, man, this is the home of some wicked freaking mullets. They get brazen out here with it. I love it.
So have you ever ventured over to the Ryman Auditorium?
Oh, absolutely. We did. So this time last year, we had released just kind of like a little teaser single off this album. This is the first single that we released here recently, Back Road. But last year, we released a song called Ghost during Halloween. And we were really fortunate to do this little spoof. I'll have to share it with you of over at the Ryman. And it basically was like, is the Ryman haunted? And so we got to kind of go around and get to see all the sites of the Ryman and like where Bill Monroe's statue's at and where Johnny Cash kicked out the lights, you know, going out the back entrance to go get a beer at Tootsie's. All these cool spots where we kind of got immersed with it. But we didn't see any ghosts.
I was going to say,
kind of a cliffhanger.
What's the verdict? Is it haunted?
I mean, they say that every night Nashville's Haunted Tours will absolutely stop and make a big deal about it every night. So I feel like if that's the case, it's got to have some issue. Plus, it used to be a church as well.
Yeah, so that's why they call it the Mother Church.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
So what's crazy is we did the tour. My family and I went to Nashville 2018. No, it was, it was Thanksgiving of 2018, because we ate Thanksgiving dinner in the mall that's right there beside the Gaylord Opryland.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever that mall is there. Yeah, we had Thanksgiving dinner at a seafood joint. It was awesome.
That's awesome.
But I remember my wife and I had a down day, and I said, honey, I've got to see the Ryman. You know, as a music nerd, as a radio nerd, as a broadcasting nerd, as a just a nerd of all this industry, you know. And they took us through that tour where they kind of give you the history and the background when you go in. And what I thought was the most amazing is the guy who built it was, I guess, like an evangelistic minister.
Yeah.
And at that time when it was built, and he settled on that land, and I might be butchering this, I'm sure there might be a Ryman expert listening to this that's going to go in the comments, but when he built that, I believe that whole area of Nashville was like a swamp or swamp land or something. And what's crazy to me is like where the Ryman sits now, there wasn't, from what I remember that tour, there was nothing else there. And he used to have his church ministry or whatever in a tent in that region. That's why he settled on that area. And when I guess the church, I forget why it went under, but there was a reason why the church went under, or he moved or they moved, something happened. And then that's when the Opry, and I don't know the exact story, took over, but yeah, it was a church. And then you had the Opry come in, and just you think about all the iconic just performers, either country, rock. I mean, you even had hip hop in there now through the years that have graced those halls, man. It is something special for sure.
It's insane. It really kind of is one of those few places still left where you can go in and like be like awestruck, like truly taken back just because of what it represents.
You can touch history.
Yeah. It's humbling in many ways.
So a funny story real quick on the Ryman, and folks who listen to my podcast have heard this story. So last week, I had the director of the Ohio Center for Broadcasting on when I was in school there in 2002, 2003. And he was a big part of my entry into the music industry, into broadcasting and media. And I always had a lot of respect for this guy. His name's Dave Linehan. And so fast forward, I haven't seen Dave since 2003 when I graduated. Now we've kept in touch on the socials, you know, but haven't seen him, haven't talked to him. We go to Nashville, like I tell you, we're taking the Ryman tour, like I was telling you about. And my family and I, my wife and my two kids, were standing in line to do the Ryman tour. And there's probably 40, 50 people in that lobby waiting to take this tour. And it's quiet, you know, everyone's kind of waiting. And he has a big booming radio voice, you know what I mean? And out of the quiet, you hear Nick Scott. And I'm like, is this where it ends? Is the Lord calling me home? I mean, it was like reverberating, right? And I turn around and there's Dave, the director of the school I went to. He's a singer-songwriter in Nashville. And by the way, I'll link you guys up. He's an extremely awesome, talented singer-songwriter.
Sounds like he's almost kind of sounds like Optimus Prime a little bit too.
Yeah. Oh, he's got the pipes, man. He does.
Nice.
But, he was working, I guess, part-time because he loved the Ryman, and he loved going there. He loved just being a part of that history. So he got a job like a couple days a week just doing tours as a tour guide. And that's what he was doing. It was one of those small world moments, man. So every time I think of the Ryman, I think of that experience with Dave, and it's pretty special. But COVID, like a lot of things, ended that, and now he just does singer-songwriter stuff. So I'll have to hook you up. He's in Nashville too.
That'd be awesome, man.
And he does some songwriter roundtables at a couple local night spots around there you might want to check out too.
Absolutely.
Now, do you do any of that? Do you go out and play any local shows?
I've mainly been doing, so we spent the year after COVID, things were weird with like the live music side of things. Like lots of stuff receded, and then a lot of stuff came back like full force. But basically, we spent the year after COVID just buckling down, hunkered down on the music. And then this last year, I've been performing a lot, doing a lot of festivals. I've played a lot down on the Gulf Coast just from having, you know, had a few years of being down there as it was. I've been really fortunate lately to, I played the Nissan Stadium Taco Fest. I played the Cardinal Stadium in St. Louis for their Taco Fest. I've been included on a lot of these Taco Margarita Fests. I guess I'm the taco guy.
I can't think of a better name to have.
Oh my gosh, it's freaking awesome. Obviously. A bunch of margaritas and tacos also. Yeah. You really can't complain. And but no, we've been playing a lot of kind of things like that in town. It is more so singer-songwriter stuff that I'd probably do. Like, not a lot of full band work, unless you're – and nothing against being down on Broadway. It's just there's a different – like, there's some people that move to town, and, like, their whole focus is, like, man, I want to play on Broadway 6-7 nights a week to all the tour. I want to do all that. And I've been working in and out of Nashville for 10, 12 years, and I've kind of set my expectations and sights on just a little something different this time around, because I loved playing down on Broadway back in the day, playing 3-4 hours a night and a bunch of covers and stuff. And that was, man, like, some of the best memories of playing music. But I feel like this push now, we're really trying to kind of take the music to small towns and little festivals and try to really see, you know, what this artist thing's all about, you know, I'm trying to get a bit of music out there.
So, let's get to your music, man. Are you recording an album? Are you finished an album? Are you getting ready to release an album?
So the last year and a half, we've been working on an album that I kind of titled like Chase Your Purpose, as corny as that is. It's a true story for me, man. Like, I was not chasing my purpose. Music has been my life's purpose for my whole life. And there was a few years where I just wasn't. And it took me to like a really weird space, you know, for me. And so, you have kids, you know, and you grow up and you start to have them kind of see you in that, and you don't want them to. You want them to see, you know, you in your full glory, you know, doing what you are meant to do. And so that's why I kind of hunkered back down. And so I spent last year making all this music with Danny Rader, and super proud of it. We just released a new single last week called Back Road, and it's been all right. We got like almost, I think like 60,000-70,000 streams in the last 4 or 5 days.
Wow.
We got the music video. Honestly, I just found this out like a week or so ago. This is crazy. So a week ago, I found out from my manager and my PR agent that People Magazine has opted in to kind of team up with us to premiere the music video Day After Tomorrow on the 13th. So
that is awesome.
That's going to be wild, man.
And then, do you already have the music video done?
Yeah, it's already done. Yeah. My homeboy, Mark Lumens, and Sean O'Halloran, with Sean and Mark, freaking, they knocked it out of the park, man. Like,
well, for those watching and listening, this is some live in the moment stuff.
Yeah.
Is there a way you can maybe send me a file of that and I can add it to the end of this?
Yeah, absolutely. I can send you. I know we have like, I think, some kind of teaser thing up. I know I got in trouble the other day for sharing it because they were like, dude, you don't get how this works. I was like, I don't. I'm just so excited. They're like, People has the premiere for 24 hours, bro. You're going to, I was like, okay. I was like, all right.
Well, I tell you what, don't send me the music video. Send me the song. We'll put the song at the end with some of your cover art, and so people can hear the song, and we'll put the links up to your music, and we'll let People Magazine, they can steal my spotlight on this one, I guess.
Well, this is something that I think you would know about. I'm still kind of learning, learning the game when it comes to some of the terminology. But are you familiar with Play and PE, the Play and PE arts?
Mm-hmm.
So we're coming to country radio, basically, like as we speak. We've got a couple stations in Kentucky that have picked it up. They're in Pikeville, not too far from West Virginia.
Not too far. It's about 2 hours south of me here.
Oh, wow. See, I need to come up, man, to Charleston and go to Pikeville and, you know, come see some of y'all, man. Like, that.
What I would recommend is either have your manager or you, you know, working in radio for 20 years, I could tell you that it's kind of cool to have an actual artist reach out. But whatever those stations are, what I would recommend is either have your manager or yourself either call or email and say, hey, you know, thank you for picking up my record, blah, blah, blah. How about I stop in sometime to the studio? I would say 75-90% of the time, that program director is going to say, yeah, man, let me hook you up with my morning show, or yeah, man, let me hook you up with my afternoon drive guy.
That's awesome. Yeah.
And you'll go in, you'll do a live studio. The only thing I would steer you in the direction of is in this day and age, this is one of the reasons I don't do terrestrial radio anymore. As far as a live jock is, you know, podcasting is really the leading edge of the industry right now.
Yeah.
And everybody's doing it. So, and plus you can reach a broader audience. Like I can reach, and I do reach people all across the United States. Now, most of my listens and downloads are in like the West Virginia, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Kentucky, you know, area. But I do get listens and downloads in Texas, Oklahoma, Washington, places like that. So when you do a radio interview, you're usually just covering that radio's market. So for instance, Charleston or there in Nashville, the local stations. But if you can get on more podcasts like this, you are reaching a national, if not a global audience. So just keep that in mind as you're doing your PR, who you're trying to target and who you're trying to get your music out to.
I'm the dude that just wants to say yes to any and everything, man. Like whether it's podcasts, news, morning
dude,
show.
When you reached out to me, I was like, holy crap, Chase wants to jump on. That's awesome.
Bro, what had happened is we heard about some of the Kentucky stations playing the song. And then I started realizing how close it was to West Virginia. And I had my grandma say she had heard it on the radio. And I was like, man, if I don't reach out to some of my folks back home and hit up like Nick Scott and like say what's up and all of a sudden this thing like pop on the radio, I'm going to look like such a loser. So I was like, you know, man, I need to reach out to some of these people.
I appreciate
that. Believed in me, you know, early on, man. Say what's
up. You know, radio for me and folks have heard me tell a story, so I'll give you the small summarized. You know, I did live radio for 15 years and I loved it. The industry doesn't pay very well. It's people anymore. And that's not dogging on nobody. It's just, you know, streaming, podcasting, you know, I'm kind of the enemy now because I'm taking away listeners and I'm taking away, you know, advertisers because people advertise with me. But when that all started to set in, and like you, I've got kids and I had to make a decision, you know, feed my family.
Right.
But the good thing about podcasting this platform is I can reach a national and global audience and it's growing. And I can have awesome artists and folks like you on that I can help, if I can be of any help, I should say, get your word out there and tell folks about what you got going on. So I couldn't do the podcast without you got folks like you wanting to come on here.
Oh man. Well, dude, that's all. I'm really happy that you brought me on, man. And like made a few minutes for me. I know it was kind of like last minute. But
oh, it's all good.
I was convinced, man. I was like, dude, I got to get in touch with Nick, man.
So you said, and I think I saw him running around the background, you have kids now?
Yeah. So, yeah. Lyric.
How many?
So I've got two daughters, Brooklyn and Lyric. Brooklyn's my oldest. She just left for a little spend the night with her friend. They're on fall break here in Nashville. And Lyric is back here just kind of hanging out. She's 4. So she's just kind of in the pre-K world, just getting kind of to make some school friends. But, no spend the nights yet for her.
Not yet. And how old's the oldest?
8. So actually, she just turned 9 this past August. Gosh, I can't believe she's already 9.
Dude, what's crazy is our kids are the same age. My daughter just turned 9 Saturday,
nice.
October 9th. And then my son turned 4. What's that?
You'll have to tell her happy birthday from me.
I will. And I'll show her this. She'll love that. And then my son turned 4 in May.
Nice, dude. So literally, we have kids the exact same age.
It's crazy. Now, I might be getting too nosy here. Did you end up getting married or engaged?
Yeah. So Jacqueline from Charleston, West Virginia, went to Riverside. Yep. We've been married now over 10 years, been together 12 years.
Wow. Congrats.
Yeah, pretty much like that year. The whole reason why I essentially came up and did the Riverside prom was because I had begun dating her. So it's been basically every bit of that.
12 years.
Yeah. That was like the first real year. I was like, man, we're gonna pack up the band, we're gonna pack up the tour bus, we're gonna go to Charleston, we're gonna throw a party because I love this woman.
Yeah. Do you still have that tour bus? I remember it.
No, we ended up actually selling it. It just started kind of becoming more of a maintenance thing. We had let a lot of different artists kind of rent it out over the years. So we decided, plus nowadays they have all these sprinters that kind of do the job. And we've kind of downsized to that for now, you know, but you never know. Hopefully this next year with some new music coming out, we'll have to.
I remember walking out of the studio after we did our live interview and you were parked in the front of the radio studio and on the front of the bus, it said Chase at the top. Do you remember that?
It was a bit dramatic. We had to let people know, you know?
Yeah.
Oh man.
But I remember walking into the studio that day, my first encounter with you. I remember walking into the studio and nobody told me you were coming in. Like, no one in management. I had zero heads up. And I get there, and I had a few, like, responsibilities I had to knock out that morning. And I walk in the studio, and they're like, oh, by the way, at 10:30 or something, you've got an artist coming in. I'm like, who? His name's Chase. He's from here. I'm like, are we playing any of his music? Oh, we're going to play a couple of his songs for the next few weeks. Can you give me a bio or something to go off of so I know what I'm talking about? But if I remember correctly, we had a great time. Oh, honestly,
no, I freaking loved it. That was a cool moment, man. Because honestly, that clip that I sent you from Fox 11, so that was when that would have been the only other time I've ever performed in my hometown, essentially where I was born there in Charleston, was then at Sissonville Middle School, and then for the Riverside Prom Party. So I think I'm long overdue for a show, man.
Yeah, you need to come into a show. And when you do, holler at me.
Absolutely.
In the news clip you sent me, and I'm going to have to download that and edit it into our video here so people know what we're talking about. They can see you at 11 in a boy band, which is pretty cool. Your hair is all spiky and you got the frosted tips.
Oh, man. We thought
I hating on it. I could show you pictures of me circa 2002, 2003, getting into the DJ game, the radio game. I had earrings, spiked hair with blonde tips, Abercrombie shirt. I mean, I was a cutout of the style.
Did you have any of those time. UFO parachute pants?
Absolutely.
Oh, dude, we're now old enough that they're coming back in style, dude. It's crazy. I've been seeing like Russ, shout out to Russ, Justin Bieber. They've been literally wearing the old school UFO pants.
Do you remember JNCO jeans?
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
The big elephant ears?
My mom never let me have them. I had to settle for the, I guess, like the off-brand JNCO, which was pipe jeans. Yeah, yeah.
Or Union Bay. Mm-hmm. But I, the video. So it said in that video, ADD moment, I'm sorry. In that video, the news video, your mom said she's from Nitro.
Yeah.
So do you still have family here in Nitro?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. So my cousin Stephanie lives there. Married to basically who would be my cousin-in-law. I don't know how that really works. We just call them family. They got a beautiful little boy. We try to make it up there all the time. Now, all of my in-laws, essentially are all from there, all from Charleston. They all still live there. My brother-in-law lives there, which also is named Chase. My mother-in-law, lives there. My wife's grandmother, my kid's great grandmother lived there. We have a ton of family still in West Virginia. So it's kind of like, it still blows my mind that I've not had a show in recent years.
Sounds like you need to get on the horn with your manager and be like,
as I say it and talk about it more, it becomes more unsettling.
Well, the good thing about the Charleston area, so I've been here over 16 years now. When I first came here in 2006, there wasn't many venues in terms of folks like you and I, you know, as a DJ to do a night spot, or even for a singer-songwriter or an artist to do their material. What I can say over the last seemingly 5 years, now COVID put a stop to some of it, but what we do have is we're lucky to have some entrepreneurs here in Charleston that are opening establishments that do cater to artists and singer-songwriters, and the city of Charleston is opening up to more live acts and things of that nature. So I think you'd find more opportunity now than you would have 12 years ago when we first met.
Right. I feel like the couple times we visited just this last year or two, my wife and I have kind of taken stock and looked downtown and been like, man, there's a lot that has been developing and changing down here, especially by the riverside there in downtown Charleston, which I think is amazing. I think Charleston is one of the most beautiful cities. I've been all over this country, man, and Charleston is something special. It really is.
It is. And, you know, I've said I'm from Cincinnati, born and raised. I never thought that I would have stayed in West Virginia when I got here in 2006. It is a testimony to the people of West Virginia in Charleston that I've decided to make a life here. The good thing is, in the city of Charleston, when I got here, there was a gentleman by the name of Danny Jones, who was the mayor. Now, I know Danny personally. I consider him a friend. He's a good dude. Older guy from a different generation Nothing wrong with that, but what he was kind of into and his administration was into and things like that, not so much, if you want to call someone like me in my 30s when he was mayor, was really into, especially the younger folks. So I think there was a bit of a divide there. Even though I think he did a good job, the type of events and even concerts for artists and festivals for artists like yourself, up and coming or what have you, DJs, was kind of limited. About 4 years ago now, we got a new mayor by the name of Amy Goodwin, also a friend, very sweet lady, rock star. She's a little younger, and she has a completely different approach to getting the city involved in arts, in music, in festivals. They brought Regatta back this past year.
I was about to say, that's like music to my ears. I remember as a kid the Regatta Festival and how impactful that was to the city and what it meant. I mean, it was a big deal. That's awesome. That's really cool.
It was back this last year, and it was huge.
Oh, man, that's so cool. Dude, I need to come play the regatta next year. What are we talking
about? They got a regatta committee, man. You need to...
Dude, we got to... We need to solve the problem.
Well, we'll send them this clip. I'll clip this, and I'll say, see, look, I just hit mark clip, and we're going to say, regatta committee, you got to get Chase on
to perform. Oh, man, that would be amazing.
But they brought it back for the first time, I want to say, in 12 years or so. I think the last year was 2008, and they brought it back this last year. They had, if I remember correctly, Martina McBride. They had Rick Springfield of Jesse's Girl fame.
Yes.
They had, so many. There was four big major concerts.
And literally all the boats and everything?
All the stern wheelers, all the boats. Yes. So they had a major stage set up at the end of the boulevard downtown, and then they have a set stage called Haddad Riverfront Park where they have Live on the Levee and other music acts. So they had acts playing on that stage, they had the major acts playing on the big stage, and then they have other parks throughout the city where they had, like, I went and judged a battle of the bands with rock bands, and I was one of the judges. So they had like local talent competing there. I had DJ friends that were doing like DJ related shows. My buddy Woody Woods and EJ Price and all them, they were doing some really cool stuff out there as well during Regatta. So the cool thing about Regatta is not only did they have major national acts involved, but they also got the local musicians, the local DJs involved, and folks like yourself involved. So there could be place for...
That would be amazing. That would be like a dream come true. I think there's a lot of people in my family that if they're watching this later on are going to be like, oh my gosh, don't tease us. Let's make this freaking happen.
Yeah.
We'd have a lot of people show up and show out.
So if you were to play Regatta, let's go down this rabbit hole. What would the listener or the music fan that knows nothing about Chase, what kind of music would they be in store for?
Well, so that's interesting. Honestly, they'd be in store for a little bit of everything, because I know that sounds like a cliche answer, but my influences have literally been all across the board. You know, you might hear us obviously do some of our originals, which a lot of people try to classify as kind of like country rock pop stuff. If you like Dan and Shay or Rascal Flatts or Keith Urban or something like that, that's what a lot of people kind of, or Morgan Wallen, they kind of, that's the easy lob, right? But the truth is, if you peel back the layers, what you're hearing is you're just hearing a kid that has a love for country music, R&B music, pop music, that grew up freaking obsessed with Stevie Wonder, Michael Jackson, Garth Brooks, Tim McGraw, early Tim McGraw. Yeah.
Classic. Don't take the girl, Tim McGraw.
Like Julian Outlaw, like, you know, Not a Moment Too Soon, like, you know, like that kind of stuff. So I don't know. I think they'd be in store for a little bit of everything. And sometimes, because I do have a lot of friends in the industry that aren't just in country or pop, but like also hip hop, R&B, like really good friends with Young Jock growing up, you know, grew up with Darius Harrison these last few years, man, and doing a lot of writing with him, which he did Kiki Do You Love Me for Drake. Super talented too. And even did Lollipop for Lil Wayne. So like I draw from all people that I respect and that I look up to, and I try to emulate it. I feel like at the end of the day, we're all just kind of emulating what we truly are influenced by. So you'll get a little bit of everything, you know. Yeah, that's the truth. But you will have fun. That is.
So, what inspires you to write? Is it just life? I mean, a lot of artists write about heartbreak. I mean, it sounds like your marriage and your love life is well.
It well. Yeah, so, without hardship, a little bit, you know, everyone has their hard times, right?
Yeah.
You know,
so where do you draw your inspirations to write from?
So what I tend to do, and I got to work on this a little bit. My wife always jokes with me. She's like, you know, you're kind of like an isle of a man. Like, you'll sit with your thoughts. You'll kind of quiet. You'll kind of, you know, no one really knows until you open up, talk about it, like what's really going on. You'll kind of, I'm always the guy that's like, even if everything's not going right, I'm always the guy to say, yeah, it's great. You know, we'll figure it out kind of thing. Right. And I've just kind of learned in the therapeutical kind of process how to unpack that. And the way I do it is every now and again, I lift the lid off of that, whatever it might be, whether it's family stuff, personal stuff, career stuff, and I just write. I don't try to write all the time because I feel like then the quality kind of dips when you're kind of constantly trying to punch that clock. I try to just be aware of when I'm feeling a little too built up or too full and need to release. And then I seem to just write 3 or 4, maybe a dozen songs. And then there it is. Then it's gone. You know, we'll come back to it. Maybe some of them will turn into a real record. Some will just sit on a hard drive forever. But that's my process to it. Because nowadays, as much as I want to write really, really cool songs that can compete on radio, I just want to write honest stuff, you know, that does something for me. So it's like I can get it out of me and then let it be.
Absolutely. That's awesome, man. And that's a really cool place to write from. You know, something I've been open about. Even in my terrestrial radio days and now in the podcast world, in 2020, they diagnosed me with post-traumatic stress. I sometimes am hesitant to talk about that because I feel like I'm taking away from like combat veterans and folks who have earned that title in far worse situations than I was ever in. So I don't want to take any respect away from them. Mine was from childhood stuff. But knowing as an adult who still had those lingering abuses from my childhood, there was a lot of hurt, a lot of pain, a lot of heartache, and still even stuff into my adult life today that, you know, my mind, my memory goes back to. And one thing that I've found that helps, you were talking about, there it goes, releasing it and it's out, is, you know, I play guitar and I play guitar with my church as well. There is something so powerful about sitting down and just writing a lick or writing a melody or learning 4 or 5, for me, learning 4 or 5 worship songs for my church and then actually going to church and doing that for the congregation and not only being fulfilled myself, but watching others be fulfilled from what we're doing on stage playing together. And you were talking about there it goes, getting it out there, let it go, you know, and I've tried to tell people who do suffer from anxiety or even maybe some depression, you know, for me, art, whatever you might consider art to be, you and I consider art to be music. But if it's drawing or painting, it's such a wonderful outlet for just getting those emotions out of you so you're not carrying that weight. Does that make any sense?
Oh, 100%. I mean, I think what I think about when you say that is, you know, when you're making, whether it's a song or a painting, it requires, if there's any human involvement with it, it requires the human to have to stop and be fully present, you know, at least just for that moment, or else it won't get done. So when you're making music, it requires you to kind of stop and have to just be present in
the
moment.
Is that the wife walking behind you?
Yeah, here.
Say, I know that's a complete ADD moment. Can we say hi?
Yes. Come here and just give a quick little wave. She feels embarrassed because she just woke up.
Well, tell her this. A lot of folks from West Virginia watch and listen to this.
Folks listening.
Hi. Anything you want to say to the West Virginia peoples?
Anything you want to say to all the amazing people of West by God? She loves and misses every one of y'all.
That's awesome.
Hey, we're going to try to make it work when we can try to play the regatta next year, though. So you'll get to visit. We're trying to make it up here soon for the holidays, so we'll have to let you know about that.
So we're in Nashville.
What you were saying though about,
okay,
I think it's a really important thing, and I think the reason why you have found a little solace in that is because it's as a semi anxious person or ADHD kind of person too, right? Like, we're constantly like thinking about the ever moving goalposts, right?
And
we're
either going
too little or too much. You know, it's like this constant paradigm. When you have a moment to paint or a moment to read or create or write a poem or play guitar, you're having to slow your world down for a minute, which is an odd thing. And it feels good, you know? And I think if you're someone out there that's like dealing with things like that, or whether it's anxiety or just childhood trauma, and you're just kind of always caught in that place where you don't really have any release, I highly suggest writing or reading or painting or playing a guitar, you know, just to try it, because it's true. What you're saying is very true. I've definitely found that true myself.
And, you know, some of the most successful, and not that success matters, but some of the most influential, I'll use that word, influential singers and artists and people of our time, a lot of that music was influenced through heartbreak and trauma and desperation.
That's some of the best hits. And unfortunately, it's a weird kind of dichotomy of being a songwriter. Is it's kind of like the old saying, like what comics used to say, like the funniest guy is typically the saddest, you know. It's kind of that weird dichotomy as a songwriter. Like, you know, you hope that you're always writing songs like, you know, Cool in the Gang and celebrate good times and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But a lot of the times that's not the case, you know, and you're writing music for people to be able to use as a tool to get life, you know.
Well, one shining example to me is Robin Williams.
Yeah.
I mean, suffered from extreme depression. One of the funniest comedians, stand-up comedians, movie comedians ever. I mean, and probably will ever be. And unfortunately took his own life from depression.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's a real thing. It's a real thing. Mental health is a real thing. And depression is a real thing. And
what I love about that is, what I love about that is our society now is becoming more accepting and aware of it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Like more available for the conversation. You don't feel like such a outcast if you want to talk about it. You know,
exactly.
And I think that's, you gotta prepare the table for the conversation in order to have it. And I'm just glad that I definitely feel like the one thing, there's a lot of things that people kind of bust the chops of this new generation about. But I think the one thing that everyone is pretty much in tune with is basically we all need to be more accepting and more inclusive, you know, especially when it comes to conversations like this. Because it's, I don't know anyone in this day and age that mental health or depression or addiction or anything like that has not personally touched their home or come to their doorstep. I think before we were just better at hiding it, but now everything's in real time. Social media is just like this, it's a great mask, but it also can be a great microscope too.
That is very true. You know, I've mentioned before, you know, in my grandfather, even my father's era, you know, it was, be a man, put your pants on, go to work and shut up. You know what I mean? And that's when you saw so many men, you know, become criminal, do horrific things to their families, whether it be abuses, become alcoholics or drug abusers, I should say. So I think having mental health more open to the discussion and more people feeling comfortable to have that discussion and maybe go talk to a professional, I feel, and I hope I'm not wrong by saying this, but I feel like more folks, how do I say this? I think it'll decrease the number of maybe horrific incidents in our society because people are getting themselves checked out. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. The pressure release valve has a chance.
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
There's a chance for a person to maybe think twice, you know.
Well, not to change gears, I've all had you on here for almost an hour. I know you got that beautiful family behind you. So let's talk about music and what song do you want to debut and share with folks here on the podcast, and tell us a little bit about the inspiration of this song and what it means to you.
Absolutely. So I want everyone out there that is tuning in to be streaming, listening to Backroad. Be kind of looking out for the video to drop. It's on all major streaming platforms. Anywhere that you can stream music, download music, it's there. You just look up Backroad by Chase. And you'll see this mug there, and the inspiration more or less behind the song. So I said earlier on, I've been working with a huge inspiration of mine, a mentor of mine, Danny Rader. You know, he spent over a decade touring with Keith Urban, has worked with countless amounts of artists that are just unreal. Has like over 62 number ones to his name. And why he decided to kind of hunker down post pandemic and make some songs with me is still beyond me. But we're really proud of the music we're making. So one of the sessions we had sat down and we're like, you know, everyone has a spot where they have fallen in love at. Like essentially everyone has a spot in their life if you've ever fallen in love. And to a lot of folks, you know, I think when you think of that, like they immediately go to like movie scenes and it's like the Eiffel Tower or some nice restaurant or some, you know, not so realistic place. When the reality is, especially for maybe a lot of country music fans, it's not some hoity-toity place. It's just simply a spot on a back road by a river, you know, sipping homemade wine or in the back seat of your dad's car, you know, kind of thing. Like, and so we wanted to, you know, make a song specifically about that. And thus Backroad was born.
That's so awesome, man. Well, let's check out new music from Chase called Backroad. Dude, it's been awesome catching up with you. Thank you, Nick. And if you come to West Virginia, I expect a phone call or a message or something.
Oh, absolutely, dude. At this point, man, we're family, bro. So save me a plate for Thanksgiving. It's coming up, brother.
Thank you, sir, man. It's good having you on here, brother.
Rock on, man.
Yeah, you never were one for city lights. You said they blocked out the sky, made the stars hard to find. More of a Duro Queen, pink G-bomb 35s. If I close my eyes, I can see you now. Your long hair blowing in the wind with the windows down. Now you're out in the world and I'm thinking about how we fell in love on the back road. Running up from the home and waiting on hell. Girl, heaven only knows. Cause we were a riverbed blanket sipping blackberry wine. With the night moving fast, we were taking our time. I never thought you would go. Cause we fell in love on the back road. Yeah, not much has changed. I still cruise around. And girl, I'm guilty, I admit, still feel your lips. When I drive past the street where we first kissed. If I close my eyes, I can feel it now. A Friday night, Ferris wheel ball spinning round.
We'll be right back.